It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Hello, esteemed nerds of the planet Earth. It is Tuesday, June 15th, 2021. And you know what Tuesdays mean? It's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 191 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Maxion, and I have my fellow nerd, connoisseur of comedy, and all-around great guy, Mr. Lom Galuga, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. Dude, how are you doing?
Dude, I'm doing phenomenal, man. So we just finished the move. We are officially in Wisconsin, and we're loving it so far, man. I have no complaints. I have probably gained 5 to 7 pounds in the past week just eating really good food. I don't know if you knew this, but cheese is a big thing.
I had heard that cheese was a thing there, yes.
Yeah, it's huge. So eating that, and there's a frozen custard place literally like 3 minutes from my new house. So
frozen custard? Is it a name I would recognize?
No, it's a local place. It's just a local mom and pop place. It's not a chain.
Even better.
But it's phenomenal. And so they have like Bavarian chocolate and then a vanilla flavor every day. And then they have a flavor of the day as well, which is good, but bad if you're trying to be healthy. So, but no, life is phenomenal, man. This is the new setup for now. We'll see if I stay in this spot. But dude, all I care about is that I'm excited to be back doing the pod, excited to get into the comedy scene, and hyped to talk about video games tonight, man. So much to talk about.
Yeah, so much to talk about. And I have been trying my best to stay apart from it so that I wasn't spoiling or getting your thunder stolen. So I'm excited to hear about some of these things, hopefully for the first time as we record this live.
But here's the thing, Mac. It's been 3 weeks probably since we like really talked. But so I talked about what's up with me. What's up with you?
Oh, dude, the past couple of weeks have been, just kind of normal. I'm coming up on some celebratory stuff, which is fun. I've played some games. I've read some books. I've watched some television. This will all come up later. But in general, it's mostly just been same stuff, different day. But in a good way, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, man.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, I say we do what we do best and hop right into that gaming news, man. What do you think about that?
Oh, I say let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 191 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Mac, I don't know if you knew this. There was kind of a big gaming event that happened the past few days.
Big gaming event?
E3.
Whatever could it be? E3, you do not say.
There is so much news, and we are absolutely not going to cover it all. I don't even know what to do for the topic of the week because there's just so much stuff that's awesome.
Maybe topic of the week gets to be news round two.
Yeah, it can be news round two. Maybe we'll just do that. So let's bring the heat from the first moment, which I know that you're excited for Back 4 Blood, which you're a Left 4 Dead fan. You like the zombie stuff, and I do too. It was announced a couple things surrounding that game. This is on GameInformer.com. Here's the first piece of news. Back 4 Blood DLC only needs one player to have it for the whole party. And I'm not even going to read the whole article, but they basically have just said, you know, we're not going to separate communities by making everyone buy the DLC. We're going to just have one person have it, and then your friends can all team up with you. That's the first piece of news surrounding this game.
Oh, so that's with respect to DLC, but DLC specifically, not like the standalone game.
That would be way too awesome. The standalone game you still have to purchase, unless you have Xbox Game Pass, because it was announced that this game will release for, quote-unquote, for free on Xbox Game Pass. So, thoughts on, you know, quote-unquote, free DLC, where just one person in your party has to have it, and also thoughts on it being on Game Pass. Like, I've asked you this many times, you've always kind of said, no, I'm not interested in Game Pass, but does this push you over the edge, being able to play this game along with a ton of others on Game Pass?
I mean, there is no doubt that Game Pass is quite the value. What a savings. And I more power to anybody who's going to get use out of it. My big concern is primarily, you know, I shouldn't say it like this, but where I stand with respect to a video game is already so tenuous in general, even when I'm buying the game direct, that I... I don't like the idea of buying the passes. But hey, more power to everybody else. I'm glad that it's something. It's lots of value. Awesome. We don't have the time for me to dig down into exactly what my issues are, because they are deep-seated and many.
That's totally fair, man. So let me just do this, like, to kind of transition and stick on this topic, because I'm a huge fan of Game Pass, and like finding out that this game was going to be on there got me even more hyped to continue my subscription. The one concern I had, and this could have been a topic of the week, is like, what about people that pre-ordered it on the PlayStation Store? Now that it's coming to Game Pass, right? You know, it's one of those things where they probably feel like they could have gotten their money spent better elsewhere, right?
Perhaps this is another harsh lesson about not pre-ordering.
It is. It, quite frankly, it is. And I'm pretty sure that with some of the games you can pre-order on the PlayStation Store, that you can get a discount. But like, even with a $5 or $10 discount, it still doesn't make up for the fact that you could have gotten it as part of your Game Pass subscription. So, you know, I feel like maybe you're right. Don't pre-order stuff so far in advance. But Mac, I want to go over the list of stuff that has been announced for Game Pass at this past E3. These games, so much value. Yakuza, Like a Dragon, Back for Blood, we just talked about that. Starfield, if you're not familiar with Starfield, Mac, that is the new Bethesda game made by the makers of Fallout and Skyrim, effectively an RPG in outer space, and it looks awesome. Contraband, Stalker 2, Halo Infinite, I'm not reading all of these games. Hades, which I have played, and it's a great game. Psychonauts 2, a bunch of other stuff that I'm not super hyped for. Age of Empires 4, The Outer Worlds 2, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Forza Horizon 5, Among Us, etc., etc., etc. So, Mac, I ask you again. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to ask you again. But no, I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I know where you're going with it. And I think, and again, I'm not going to begrudge anybody their getting of a Game Pass. I think it sounds like a great idea for any consumer. And to finish actually your first question that I didn't get around to finishing the second half, which is that, you know, I'm excited that that Back 4 Blood's going to be available on Game Pass, but I'm even more excited that the DLC will let people, you know, only one person has to have the DLC for everybody in the crew to have access to it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I even remember, like, you coming over and us playing Left 4 Dead. And I think we were doing it co-op, so it's not really as relevant. But I could just see it being a huge pain, you know, if you have the game
to have, like, to wait for everybody to get that DLC installed,
right?
Maybe,
yeah.
To play. Yeah.
Not only installing it, but also, like, having everyone have to purchase it, right? It just doesn't, it almost doesn't make sense. Like, it's almost archaic. And I'm glad to see that we're moving on past that. So let's go to some other news stories. Mac, Nintendo knocked it out of the park.
Oh, did they?
Dude, they announced so much awesome stuff. And let's just jump into what is probably one of my top five announcements from E3 that I'm super excited for. This is on GameSpot.com by Steven Pettit. Nintendo did in fact show off the next Metroid game during its E3 2021 Direct, but it likely wasn't what fans expected. Metroid Dread, a new side-scrolling entry in the series, releases on Nintendo Switch on October 8th. Dread should hopefully tide fans over until the eventual release of Metroid Prime 4. Metroid Dread is available to pre-order now. And there's even a cool special edition with two new amiibo figures. Mac, here's a couple details. Metroid Dread is being developed by Mercury Steam, the studio behind Metroid Samus Returns for Nintendo 3DS. Metroid Dread will be the first game in the series for Nintendo Switch, but was actually originally developed for the Nintendo DS as a sequel to the wonderful Game Boy Advance game Metroid Fusion. It's the first one in 19 years. First side-scrolling Metroid game that we've gotten in 19 years. Mac, I am super hyped for this. I haven't been this hyped for a Metroid game probably ever, because Metroid Fusion is one of my favorites. And I know I recommended it to you for Game Boy Advance. no pressure, but did you ever get around to like getting that bad boy loaded up and maybe jumping in?
I have it loaded up. It's on my flash cartridge, but I haven't jumped into that one yet. However, knowing that there's a new one in the series that's coming up, I think I'll be giving this some much higher priority.
Okay, very cool. My internet here in Wisconsin needs some work. I'm hardwired right now. And you're talking like robot speed. So it's definitely my end, but it's functional. Now you're back to normal.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's this Wisconsin internet, man.
If it makes you feel any better, you're coming through perfectly crystal clear on this side.
You know what? Football is the thing out here. Tech, not so much. I had to get a new internet provider, who I had in Illinois, and it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time for me to explain to them what Twitch is, the fact that I do it a few times a week, and the fact that my internet needs to be spotless. Like, it can't be spotty. It needs to be smooth.
You remember when we had to have these conversations back when we still lived in the same town with the ISPs?
I do remember. I do remember. And Wisconsin is better than that, but I think I may just need to get some more bandwidth. So, welcome to all those who are here live. We appreciate y'all being here even after a few week hiatus live for the show. Thank you so much. So anyway, Metroid Dread pre-orders are live now. I am excited for it. One of my top announcements of E3. Mac, I would say that probably the biggest announcement of E3 was Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 2. They announced it, and they said it's going to come out in 2022. They also gave some interesting news about it. And let me see if I can find it, because I have so many news stories open. This is on IGN.com. It says, Legend of Zelda? This is by Matt TM Kim. The next Legend of Zelda isn't actually called Breath of the Wild 2, but Nintendo isn't quite ready to reveal the official... isn't quite ready to reveal the official title yet. And Mac, I'm going to summarize that story because my iPad's giving me issues. Basically, Nintendo is scared that the title of the game is going to give away what's going to happen in the game. And so they're not ready to reveal the title yet. But here's my thing. Doesn't just saying that kind of like ruin it in the future, or am I overthinking things?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's quite like being told, oh, enjoy the sixth sense. Keep an eye open for the twist. You know, it's not quite like that. But yeah, I don't know what could possibly be so telling in the title that you would neglect to throw it out there. I don't know, maybe Return of Ganon. Or something. It beats the heck out of me.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just feel like, why did they even refer to it as Breath of the Wild 2? Why didn't they just refer to it as, you know, Project Zelda or a code name or something? And then even to tell us, like, hey, if we tell you the title now, it's going to ruin what will happen in the game. That just means that when you do tell us the title in, you know, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, that it's going to ruin what happens in the game, and we now know that. So, to me, that was kind of weird. But regardless, we haven't gotten two mainstream Zelda games on a single console generation in a while.
Yes, the last one was Nintendo 64. The last direct sequel was Majora's Mask, following up Ocarina of Time on the Nintendo 64. I don't think there have ever been... Have there ever been two direct Zelda sequels?
Not sequels like this, exactly. Yeah. Now, I'm pretty sure we got Wind Waker and Twilight Princess both on the GameCube, but Twilight Princess was also on the Wii. So it was like Twilight Princess was on both, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, it does.
And unless there's something we don't know, it seems like these will both be solely on the Switch, which to me is exciting.
Yeah, so, that is exciting.
Yeah, now what is... See, and Galvatron kind of alluded to this with his comment. He says, I have a sneaking suspicion that Nintendo is less concerned with spoilers and more concerned with positioning the sequel as a brand new Zelda game for their upgraded Switch. And it very well could be. Like, if the Switch is legitimately an upgrade and not just like a mid-console upgrade, then who knows? Maybe it has some new features and it's strictly for the new Switch, which would be frustrating. But it's a reality. It could happen. So, what else do we got here? Let's talk about this, and this will be our last news story for now. Thank you, Kane, for the 11 months of subscribing. We appreciate you. This is on Eurogamer.net by Tom Phillips. It says, by now you will have likely seen Bethesda's first in-game footage of Starfield, its long-awaited sci-fi role-playing game coming to PC and Xbox Series X/S as a console exclusive on the 11th of November 2022. Mech, that's all I want to talk about right now. We talked strictly about how Bethesda had been acquired by Microsoft, and there was a lot of debate about, will stuff be on PlayStation? Will it be on Xbox and PC only? Will it be on Xbox only? Here's what's happening. This game is coming to Xbox and PC exclusively, and it is also a part of Game Pass. Are we done seeing Bethesda games on PlayStation at this point? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I could have sworn that when it was, you know, when it was announced that Bethesda or ZeniMax or whoever it was who said it was like, current things are going to be honored, or like current arrangements for exclusivity and releasing are going to be honored, which is,
oh, yeah.
I'm very shocked to hear that this is going to be PC Xbox exclusive, unless of course those were empty claims and empty promises. I don't know. This might have been something that they originally like secured exclusivity for Microsoft originally, and maybe the next title is going to be available on multiple consoles, but it certainly doesn't look good for the hope or belief that Bethesda titles will be available on others. You know what I mean?
All right, so where are we at?
Well, I was just about to hop into video game history.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, this week in the years that have come before, I think it's worth noting the release in 1997 of the Apple II computer. Now, Apple, not exactly known for its video game prowess during most of its history, but nonetheless, the Apple II computer was one that found a lot of love in the development community. A lot of games got coded using Apple II workstations. So that's my little way to kind of shoehorn that in there. Let's get to the things that might be a little bit more recognizable, though. Mr. Nice Guy, in 2001, for the Game Boy Advance, Castlevania Circle of the Moon. Was that ever one that you did?
You know what? That's one that I missed. I got into the Castlevania stuff. Like, I was in it on NES. I loved that those old school games. And then I got really into it on the DS, but I did not get into the GBA ones. Tell me about it.
Gotcha. Well, the GBA ones, there was Circle of the Moon, Aria of Sorrow, and I forget the third one. I want to say something.
Oh, I played Aria of Sorrow. Yeah, for sure.
I felt like Aria of Sorrow was really good, and I feel like there was a third one. Anyway, I haven't played all three extensively, but I have played Circle of the Moon. It's pretty decent. I feel like one of the things that it benefited from is better... I felt like the sprite work was better in Circle of the Moon, but I felt like the mechanics were better in Aria of Sorrow. They all have, you know, they all have their pluses and their minuses. I feel like some of them had, you know, this aspect that was better or that was better, but they all kind of brought good things to the franchise, and they were all very much in that Symphony of the Night style, that sort of genre that I love, you know, that is in the DNA of all of my favorite games. So Circle of the Moon, well worth playing, but well worth acknowledging for its contribution, at least in my favorite genres of video games. In 2001 as well, we also had the release on PC of Half-Life Blue Shift. So for those of you who don't know, the original Half-Life game had, I want to say, three different storylines. There was Half-Life opposing for... There was the normal Half-Life following Gordon Freeman. And then there was Half-Life opposing force.
Yes.
Following basically not quite the baddies. You know how when you're playing Half-Life, the human marines drop in and start, you know, trying to kill everybody because they got to plug the leaks and all that. This was a group of them, not the ones that, of course, you would destroy, but you know, a different group of them. And then this third one is Blue Shift, which follows Barney, the security guard from Black Mesa. And anyway, not surprisingly, in Blue Shift, Barney is surprisingly capable. Or maybe not surprisingly capable? Either way, he is way more capable than he proves to be in the mainline game. And as these all kind of came about afterward, they were able to weave in these storylines where, oh, you're in this section, and there you see Gordon Freeman go by on the train. Or you are, you know, like right at the beginning, or like later on in the game, you see Gordon Freeman, you know, dealing with that tank outside and stuff. So there's lots of really fun nods where you see these three different games all just sort of braiding together and weaving their own lines in the same way. It also makes Barney a lot cooler when you consider that you run into him, of course, in Half-Life 2 as well, and he gives you back your crowbar. It also, you know, works that nice little bit in too. So, anyway, one last one that I want to mention, actually released not too frightfully long ago, but in 2019 for the PC, Octopath Traveler.
Yeah.
So, it's a game, I know that a lot of people love it, RPG, has a nice style to it, 8 different characters, they've all kind of got their own things going on, there's some surprising depth to the game, but what I love most about it is that Octopath Traveler has pixel art for the characters that's most reminiscent of Final Fantasy Tactics, and also, you know, that being my favorite character art style of all time. Octopath Traveler being so frightfully similar was just delightful. Absolutely delightful for me. Love it. And if you're at all intrigued by that type of pixel arty JRPG, Octopath Traveler is fantastic. And as Galvatron brings up in the chat live here with us, it's on Game Pass right now. It's very good.
It's
got the Max seal of approval. It's got the Galvatron seal of approval and the Mr. Nice Guy seal of approval. It's a triple threat. And so you must enjoy that video game. That's what I had for video game history today.
So, Mac, I got a question for you, because I want some help picking our topic of the week right now.
Okay.
We can either just like riff and talk about another story from E3, something that was announced that made me get excited, or we can talk about some controversy.
Ooh.
In the gaming industry. It's your choice.
Ooh.
It's a tough decision, isn't it?
I'm leaning toward the controversy, actually. Yeah.
Okay, I kind of do too. I feel like there's more discussion. Just so everybody knows, the other story was simply going to be us talking about The Legend of Zelda Game & Watch that's coming out with 3 classic Zelda games, and I am so excited for it. Because it has Link's Awakening on it. I will lay in bed and play that every night. But the other story is from GameSpot.com by AutocratKey. Here's what it says. It says, Jim Ryan, the CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment, found himself in some hot water with the gaming masses after a quote that seemed to dismiss older games. I laugh because I feel like people get upset over everything. However, in a recently published interview with Axios, Ryan said he didn't mean to be disrespectful to our heritage, our gaming heritage, and simply put his foot in his mouth. The infamous quote was from a 2017 interview with Time Magazine. Ryan was speaking about being at a Gran Turismo event where entries in the franchise from all generations of consoles were being shown. Quote, and the PS1 and PS2 games, Ryan said, they looked ancient. Like, why would anybody want to play this? Just before saying that, Ryan commented on backwards compatibility, a contentious topic, now considered PlayStation's lackluster approach compared to Microsoft's all-encompassing take on the feature. When we've dabbled with backwards compatibility, I can say it's one of those features that is much requested but not actually used much, said Ryan. He says he's frustrated over being hit over the head with this old quote. Basically, people are saying that he doesn't like old games and disrespects, you know, where Sony came from. Is this just like cancel culture at its finest? Mac, or is there legitimacy from people here mad about backwards compatibility, mad about him not liking old games?
Okay, so I'm going to start by giving him the biggest benefit of the doubt. And let's not forget, right? If there's anyone around here that would be a shill for old games above everything else, it's definitely me, right? Like, I am...
Yeah.
But I can understand where he might be coming from. Maybe those old things don't appeal to him. And furthermore, one thing about his comments in, I guess this would be in 2017, that really strike me are his comment about it's an oft-requested feature, backwards compatibility, but it's not used very much. And if anybody would know how frequently backwards compatibility is used, it would be the people who are, as a part of that, Jim Ryan at all, you know, the people there. So I would be very intrigued to hear him elaborate on what kind of figures there are for backwards compatibility, honestly, because I love it, I want more of it, but, you know, how much is there?
Yeah, like, here's the thing, man. We've reached a point, especially with Sony, that they're releasing so much stuff. Like, they're putting out so much fire right at the end of gaming generations. I mean, at the end of PS3, they put out The Last of Us. At the end of PS4, they put out The Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima. So, to me, backwards compatibility is essential. And that's the reason why the PS5 is backwards compatible, because the PS4 library was so good that there was no way they could not allow that to have some carry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he made that comment, but at the same time, they know it's an often used feature because they're allowing it. So I don't know, like, I don't know what he meant when he said that, but let's also keep in mind, this is a quote from 4 years ago, and so maybe it's getting blown a little bit out of proportion, maybe even taken a little bit out of context. I don't know.
It could be. I mean...
Galvatron has some thoughts.
Indeed. To quote Galvatron, Jim Ryan is not a real gamer. He's an employee suit bean counter who was put in charge of their gaming division for some reason. And I don't know if that's necessarily the most generous reading or necessarily the most accurate. I don't know Jim Ryan. I don't know his background. I know Jack Ryan is a CIA analyst who always seems to be put in charge of saving the world all the time. Thank you, Tom Clancy. But this Jim Ryan guy, I mean, what I do know is that he opened his mouth about his personal feelings on a subject, which the very fact that we still have backwards compatibility being a thing as much as we do, I think seems to say that it was probably his opinion, because they wouldn't put, like you were saying, they wouldn't put that much effort into making backwards compatibility still a thing if it weren't actually being used. So I think it's probably just a case of his personal opinion, and, you know, I mean, more power to him for having an opinion on it. And if that was his opinion and he was in charge and yet we still got backwards compatibility, I'm glad that his opinion on the matter was not the final word. Although I can see how it would make you concerned for the time that it could potentially be the final word.
Well, and part of the thing too is he basically said, like, PS1 and PS2 games just look old and they haven't aged well. And you know what? He's 100% right about that. Because, Mac, how often do we see people remaking games, or rather doing like a throwback game in 64-bit graphics? We literally never see it. But we see it in 8-bit a lot. We see it in 16-bit a lot. Because that's a level of nostalgia that has aged well. It's a side-scrolling thing. It just really works. I've never seen someone put out, you know, a Celeste type of game or a Messenger type of game in 64-bit. And that's what he's referring to, is the fact that those old blocky graphics looked really, really great when they came out, but they just haven't stood the test of time. So I think that he's getting a bad rap for this, but I think he's 100% right.
Now, I will say, on the subject of the graphics not aging especially well, I think more so than pixelated graphics, I think the polygons struggle to convey the same sense once they're upscaled and put onto an HD television. But in those situations where you have CRT-style filters that you can throw on stuff, it actually looks significantly better. I have been playing, or I had been playing, some ROM hacks for Ocarina of Time that kind of created whole new quests out of them, right? And in it, when I was playing it on my flat screen television, thankfully my upscaler had the option of doing things like that, scan lines and adding some of those filters to make it a little bit better. It became instantly more enjoyable and more playable when those effects to try and approximate the hardware, you know, it was just made it better. Kind of like when you're standing at the microwave, right? And you're looking in and, you know, it's got like all those holes on the mesh and you kind of like move back and forth and then you like see it super clearly. It's kind of like that. You know what I mean? I'm not making any sense, but
kids, don't stare into the microwave.
There's no danger from staring into the microwave
while it's running or just in general.
Yeah. While it's running.
Don't do that.
Fine. Those of you out there, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, anyway, I think we can all agree that old games are awesome. He basically said old game is old, which I don't think is a big deal. And I hope that retro stuff continues to be made. I hope that backwards compatibility always continues to be a thing. And, you know, what we really should have talked about, now that we're down this rabbit hole, there was an announcement made this week. Many of you may have seen it. That Xbox is going to, in the near future, they're going to have their Game Pass be a part of the TVs. So just like Netflix is built into your TV, Xbox is going to be built into your TV. And you can just play the games from your TV without having to buy a console. So, you know, where he's talking about backwards compatibility, like, it may not even be that important because we may not even have consoles that much longer. So that's another thing for another time. But that has been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now we would turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. But I have to admit, for today's kick or kickstart, I actually didn't see any Kickstarters that really reached out to me. So instead, I'm going to just give us a little retrospective, a kickstart. Where are they now, if you will? I've selected four Kickstarters that we've talked about in the past, and you can go back to the specific episode if you want to hear more about them, but just want to kind of summarize and talk about, you know, where they wound up being. Mr. Nice Guy, back in episode 174, we talked about a little game called Gold River Project. Now, the name might not evoke much at the moment, but it was an open-world, four-person co-op survival game that neither of us thought could go the distance.
I remember it vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, as it turns out, we were right. It did not go the distance. unfortunately, yes, but I mean, you know, sometimes I think it's valuable for us to go back and be like, hey, Mr. Nice Guy, he calls it. He's got a good nose for these things.
We were right. We both.
Another one from episode 179, Little Nemo and the Nightmare Fiends. We talked about this one. We loved the look of it. And I have to say that this is at least one Kickstarter done oh so very right, because these guys are doing weekly development streams. Now, I've mentioned in the past that as a backer, what I want more than anything else in that, aside from a playable demo, of course, but that's the minimum entry there, right? But it's something I want to know that the game's being done. And this was actually something that through a large chunk of the development of Chasm that the devs did. They did, you know, weekly dev streams, very on the, you know, on the quiet side. And we got to tune in and watch the game being made.
On the down low.
Yeah, on the down low. And it was fantastic. And I'm glad to see that that's something that's being kept alive. In episode 181, we discussed a game, an MMO thingy called Immortal Gates of Pyre, right? Now, when we talked about it, I was incredibly skeptical. For reasons that I won't go into here, exactly why that skepticism is, go back, listen to 181. I had practically a I don't know, what do you call it, a fit and fell into it about this particular Kickstarter. But they ended with $152,000 and plenty of backers. And there was actually an issue because a lot of people canceled their funding because of a perceived Epic Game Store exclusivity for the free-to-play game that actually turned out to be a miscommunication. They were going to be an Epic Game Store exclusive at launch, is what people thought, but it turns out that it was just during the development process that if you had one of those like alpha things, you needed to use the Epic Game Store account to play the alpha builds and such, which wound up being just kind of the stuff that I was talking about, where I was just like, I don't know, I don't understand the messaging, and clearly it's had some issues, but they're going there. For those of you number crunchers among you, the average person backed a free-to-play game at $75. With a $60 pledge plus three add-ons of $5 each. And overall they $140,000 in pledges, meaning they sold $11,000 in purely the $5 cosmetic add-ons for the Kickstarter. Absolutely crazy. Madness. And, again, for a free-to-play game, those were the kinds of purchases and add-ons that they had.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. I agree. And then in episode 183, we talked about a game called Astral Ascent. Now, you and I, we both liked this pixel art beat-em-up because it had a playable demo and it looked fun. Development's been moving along after the end of their Kickstarter, and in an interesting turn, they've turned down publisher contracts and are going to self-publish the game. Now, as you recall, actually, during last episode, episode 190's Legalese, we talked about some of the things that publishers ask of their developers when they sign that paperwork. And while we aren't privy to the exact terms of these contracts, based on what we've seen in others, I think I can kind of understand them going their own way. But anyway, I know that's a little bit dry, doesn't have quite the same excitement as a usual kick or kickstart, but I think it's important to point out how frequently Mr. Nice Guy is right about these and how you should trust him when he says yay or nay on a Kickstarter. So, there you go.
You've missed me a lot, huh, man?
I've missed you so much. It's good to be back.
That was like a good 10 minutes of like, Mr. Nice Guy knows what's up. That's funny. I appreciate it.
Mr. Nice Guy does know what's up. You'd be wise to listen.
Well, very cool, dude. I appreciate that. Well, let's keep things moving for the sake of time. It is now time for a segment called Nerd Flex.
Woo-hoo.
Where you, the viewer, try to stump the host
and
with trivia
Mr.
questions.
Nice Guy.
Go ahead, Mac.
We have to start with a sound test because this is a sound test episode.
Awesome.
So while you guys get your nerdy trivia questions in to stump us, we've got a mystery sound from somehow, somewhere, some win in video games. And here in episode 191, you'll have to prove your mettle. I will play it, and then you, if you know it, you can tweet at Two Nerds in a Pod on Twitter and use the hashtag sound test and identify this episode, episode 191. Good luck. You'll need it for the prize of a pin or a perler. I hope you listened well, because that is your sound test for today. All right, Mr. Nice Guy, we can carry it away with some questions.
Let's do it. So, I forgot to type in the chat that you guys should get those questions ready. They have to be gaming related. They have to be multiple choice. And they have to be questions that have an actual answer. So if you have one, please type it in the chat. But in the meantime, we will start off with some questions from our trusty test bank while we wait for viewers to get those out. And hopefully we get some we can answer. It's loading, so bear with me.
Yep, that new internet. It's even got that new internet smell.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Okay, this is the first question. And I feel like this one's too easy, but we're going to do it because it's the one that came up. Capcom. What sort of games are Capcom's 1942 and 1943? Now, I know the answer, but I'm curious if Mac knows the answer.
I'm reasonably confident that they are those, like, overhead shoot'em bullet hells, whatever they call that genre.
Yeah, there are old arcade games, and they're like Raiden. Like, I guess now it just comes down to, can we remember the technical name of the genre? But like a scrolling plane shooter type of
yeah.
Where you're just like scrolling up the screen and it's an airplane that's just shooting.
Shmup? Is that what we call them?
Shmup? It's not a shmup. Or maybe it is. Maybe that is the technical term. But I think that we kind of have described this to the point that no matter what it says, I feel like we're right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, how could I disagree with you on that?
Someone in the chat says that is a shoot'em up. Yep, top-down shooter or shmup. So basically, we said all of those things in our answer, and that is the correct answer. And you know what, Mac? We've been away for a few weeks doing the pod, so I feel like people might be a little bit shy about asking those trivia questions. So we might just stick with the test bank. Which Rockstar game is based on a classic 1979 movie? And I think I know the answer to this one as well. I feel like these questions were all made for me.
I'm drawing a blank.
Just because I know so much about Rockstar and the games they made, I'm like 99% sure that this is a reference to The Warriors, which is an old movie that had a video game made for PlayStation 2 several years ago. And I almost picked it up just because I loved the Rockstar stuff that was coming out and thought I wanted to play it, but I ended up not. So, let's go with The Warriors. Final answer, yay, Mac?
Final answer, yeah.
It is The Warriors.
Nice.
Did anyone ever play that on PS2 in the chat? Let me know.
Yeah, I certainly haven't. But dude, thanks for carrying us today. Let me see if I can redeem myself with this question from Spanish.
Sure.
The question is, which of the following Pokemon can be found in red version instead of blue version in the American releases of Pokemon Gen 1? Is it A, Vulpix, B, Bellsprout, C, Mankey, or D, Sandshrew?
I have no idea.
Now, I remember that you could get either Nidoran or Nidoking in one version, Nidoqueen in the other, whatever their, you know, evolutions were. That was a red versus blue thing. I don't recollect which of these for sure, but I feel like the answer is D, Sandshrew. It's just been a long time, and I feel like Sandshrew is red and not blue. See, when I was playing Pokemon, I had red, but I did not have blue. My friend had Pokemon Blue, so, but you know, we didn't exactly swap cartridges ever. So
sure,
yeah. So I feel like D, Sandshrew is my guess, but I'm pretty sure I'm wrong.
I'm gonna just defer to you on that because I have no idea. So Sandshrew, final answer. Spenis, let us know ASAP in the chat what the correct answer is.
Let's see if we're right.
Oh, there's the answer. What did he say, Mac?
Both Nidoran evolutions can be caught in both versions of the game, though the frequency of one over the other may be different. Ah, okay. See, I was wrong. And the actual correct answer is C, Mankey. So there we go. At the very least, 2 out of 3. Mr. Nice Guy, thank you for carrying us to some form of partial victory. That has been Nerdflex. That now brings us to a little thing called Legalese.
Legalese.
As you know, I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast, and we like to talk about stuff that is of the legal adjacent variety because it has a lot of interface with how things are going with video games right now. And as you know, we're on sort of a prolonged overall idea. We discussed the idea of video games as an art in episode 189. We discussed publisher and developer contracts in episode 190 and learned some new and interesting things about that. And what I thought we should talk about today is about how video games are sold to us, essentially products versus services, and how those are different. Now, Mr. Nice Guy, as a clever man,
yes,
and as somebody who knows a thing or two,
yes,
about the world, if I told you that you were buying a service, or if I told you that you were buying a product, would you say what you think, just your general idea of what the difference in between a product or a service happens to be?
I feel like a product is something physical that you can touch, right? You purchase it and it's yours. A service is something that you buy it once or over a series of times and then it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. And your intuition is almost 100% spot on, with the exception of the requirement of it being physical, but that wasn't so much of a requirement as it was just a sort of general thing about it. Yeah, that is where the line is with products and services, with some little things here or there. Now, at one point in time, it was understood that video games were products, and they were given terms like limited warranties for the functionality of the games. It is notable that if you go back and you read the user agreements or the pack-in material for a video game, that these terms are almost identical all the way from Mega Man 2 to Alundra for the PlayStation to Half-Life 2 in 2005, for example. To quote one of our favorites, Mr. Nice Guy, the pack-in information from NBA Jam from 1994 on the Sega Genesis, yes, says, quote, "The purchaser of this software product," and then it, you know, lists the stuff, right? Here's some direct quotes from 007 Nightfire. Quote, "EA warrants to the original purchaser of this product." And then it goes on. What I'm getting at, what I'm trying to establish, is that video games were very much seen as a product. They'd often say stuff like, quote, "This gives you, the purchaser, specific rights with respect to this product." Those are some direct quotes. Now, when did we start seeing video games that were considered to be a service? This is a tough question to answer, because there are things that video game preservationists are crazy about, right? I'm sure you've seen some of the people finding data, finding computer stuff, finding old floppy disks and preserving that, yep, data, right? They can be crazy, but there's one aspect of video game preservation that this is going to take you by shock here, that they are not crazy about preserving, and that is end-user license agreements. Believe it or not, nobody's all that big on preserving old end-user license agreements. So if it weren't for online end-user license agreements and the Wayback Machine, I would just totally be guessing. And to a lot of extent, I am. For a lot of games that only had an online or a website-based end-user license agreement, I don't have those things at all. But there are some that I do. So let's go and look at what World of Warcraft's EULA said about ownership back in 2010. Quote, "All rights and title to the service, including without limitation, any user accounts, computer code, moral rights, game client, recording of these games, and game client and server software are owned by Blizzard or its licensors." As a brief side note, you may recall in episode 124, when people noticed the term moral rights in Warcraft 3's Reforged end-user license agreement, they lost the darn minds. But, I mean, it's been there ever since, well, at least 2010 in those sorts of things. But obviously this kind of language is what you would expect. This is the type of approach that makes sense, like Mr. Nice Guy described, for something that's a continuing service being provided. And in nowhere is something more a service than in a MOBA or an MMORPG, where things need constant updates and stuff like that. What is unfortunate about the EULAs is that at some point in time, video game companies realized, especially the publishers, realized that even game products like offline single-player games, that they could cover their own butts legally by presenting them not as a product, but as a service. Because with products come certain expectations. With services, they can kind of just walk away whenever they want. Because it would be unrealistic for us to expect their service to last forever, right?
Yep.
We can't hold them hostage for a mere pittance paid out once. We can't hold them hostage to providing us a service forever. But a product? That gets harder for them to defend when stuff stops working. Long about 2005 is when some game companies, especially Disney and LucasArts, started making the change to calling video games a service instead of selling you a product. And they expressly stated so, saying that you owned nothing but were just licensing a game. Language like license, access to service, and such appears in place of software products. Now, I had more on this, but we've already run long because I regularly don't adequately estimate how long it's going to take. So
it's a team effort. It's a group effort.
It is. Oh, no, I mean me specifically, like when I'm droning on about this nonsense. So I'm going to save something more for later. And we're going to come back to this at another time in legalese because I've still got three or four more paragraphs. But the point being is that there was a point in time when all video games, except for things like EverQuest, World of Warcraft, these online-only experiences were considered to be standalone products, and you as a purchaser had a lot more skin in the game. And as we've been talking the past several legalises about how players of games, how gamers, and how the developers and how the publishers all have conflicting needs, wants, or desires, and that leads to some real big legal issues, we're going to talk again next time about how our conflicting interests are shown inside of this product side versus service side consideration. So if you liked this, be sure to come back for episode 192, where we're going to hammer it home and finish it off. But that's been Legalese for today.
Mac, I have missed doing this, man. This has been fantastic. As y'all know, that's close to the end of our show. But before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that. And if you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know what you've been into in the chat. Mac, what have you been playing the last, like, month?
Playing? So I've been playing some tabletop RPGs, of course. I've been watching Stargate SG-1, recently finished off Season 10, so that was fun. Been watching Kim's Convenience now that Season 5 is on Netflix, so that's been good. I also have watched some things that I wish I hadn't. Like, for example, there was a movie called Buckaroo Banzai and the Eighth Dimension, starring the guy who was RoboCop in the 80s movies. It also has Jeff Goldblum. Who were some of the others? I actually wrote it down because I was kind of astonished by some of them. Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap, Christopher Lloyd, Clancy Brown, Ron Lacey, Carl Lumby. I mean, a lot of people that you would recognize, but it's awful. Never watch Buckaroo Banzai and the Eighth Dimension. It's a trip. Pack your bags and bring a support person to help you through it.
Have you ever seen UHF, the old Weird Al Yankovic?
I have, yeah, of course I have.
It's, for some reason, your description of this just made me think of UHF. I don't know why.
No, I mean, it was also absurd, but this was more absurd and trying to take itself seriously.
Got it.
So that's what I've been watching. As for what I've been playing, I haven't been playing that much in the way of video games, just my usual. But I have been playing some tabletop RPGs and also trying my hand at combining not just 3D printing, but painting as well. So you might recognize these half-finished spiritual stones from Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Awesome.
I'm working on them, and so far they're turning out okay.
Well, I've been watching a lot, man. As far as what I've been watching, I just started watching Loki. On Disney Plus, and it is solid. Did I say solid? It is solid. Been watching a lot of the NBA playoffs. Loving that. What else? Just tons of Marvel stuff. Tons of YouTube videos. Watched a few stand-up comedy specials on Netflix. And I don't know if I mentioned this last time we did the pod. We finally finished watching Arrow. I think I did mention that. And that's what I'll share for now. And then as far as, oh, and Lupin just came out, season 2. I'm going to hop into that this week. As far as what I've been playing, someone in the chat just said, Mr. Nice Guy, are you getting the new Ratchet and Clank? A.R. Wilson asked that, and the answer, A.R. Wilson, is I already got it. I already bought it!
And, already got it!
And it is phenomenal. I'm loving it. It's the PlayStation exclusive that I needed right now to get me through that PlayStation 5 drought. Having a blast with it. My kids picked up Miitopia, which is an RPG for the Nintendo Switch, where you go around casting spells and stuff using your Mii character. And they were super hyped. Like, Mac, I don't know if you remember, like, buying your first video game with your own money, but this was basically my kids' first experience doing that. And they luckily they loved the game. So now they're spoiled. Oh, they get fantastic demos. Like, they get demos. They're like, let me try it before I buy it, right? So they downloaded the demo, liked it, bought it, and they've been having a blast with it.
Back in the day, we had to pay for a gaming magazine to get a demo disc to try out a demo.
Yes, yes. And, like, the best games were all known through word of mouth. Like, the internet was not what it is today. So, anyway, Mac, what are people into in the chat? I think maybe you could just read it all if you want.
All right, I'll take it. So, Spenis is playing MLB The Show 21 Destiny 2, Spider-Man Miles Morales, and watching Loki, Recess, heck yeah, Rocket Power, Basketball, and Baseball. Galvatron is watching Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Star Wars Bad Batch, Loki, and various animal shows on Discovery Planet. And Galvatron's playing Resident Evil Village, Spider-Man Miles Morales, Degrees of Separation, and Hades. That's what we have in the chat so far for watching and playing. Thank you for sharing those nerdy suggestions with us. They all sound solid.
Awesome. Well, Mac, I'll take us home this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to episode 191 of Two Nerds in a Pod. If you had a good time, we'll be back next week here on twitch.tv/Two Nerds in a Pod. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen, if you're listening to the audio medium. And we will see y'all in a week. Thanks for watching. Bye.
See ya.